What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Welcome back, folks. Joining us is the new and improved Michael Heck in 2026, president and CEO of GNO Inc. I thought you would like that, Michael.
I love that. That was a great override. I think I had said something like beautiful day or Bill Withers, like lovely day. No, Nina Simone. With just like the deep feeling of, and I'm feeling fine, I'm feeling good. That captures it, Newell. It's morning in New Orleans.
I think that was the feeling and that was the tone throughout the inaugural activities, don't you?
It was, yeah, I agree. When I was talking to the media, talking to Dave Cohen with WWL afterwards, and they said, how am I feeling? The dominant emotion that I was feeling coming out of that event was I was feeling relaxed. It was something even more fundamental than joy or excitement or optimism, because those were all there. But I feel like my shoulders dropped. I feel like we didn't realize it, but we've been in 4, maybe 8 years of kind of political fight or flight mode. And it's been really enervating. And so to be able to say, you know what, it's still going to be politics, you're still going to be issues, but we're going to be able to deal with them like within the bell curve of normal human interaction, I'm feeling fine. I'm feeling relaxed.
Yeah. I just feel that there's going to be a sense of collaboration, a sense of coordination, more importantly, quite frankly, within the city administration and with a heightened focus on priorities. And I think they have a full grasp of the financial morass that they find themselves in. And I think they recognize that this is going to be a journey that is going to have to be very strategic in nature as to how they pull themselves out.
That's right, because I think there is a path, but to some degree, I mean, but yeah, there's so many timing dependencies in terms of cash flow. There's so many political considerations because there are going to be jobs and contracts lost. It's doable, but it's going to require collaboration and thoughtfulness, because yeah, it's not straightforward. So I think the fact that she's come into this one with radical transparency, recognizing that right now, everything that this administration exposes, they don't own, but 6 months from now they will. So they're getting it as much out now, bringing in Mike Wagas back. They're reaching out to the business community across political lines has been clear. And, you know, it's we're already seeing results. I don't want to get ahead of us, but I was in meeting with the administration earlier this week with one of the largest companies in the world. They had shown up 8 years ago and sought to partner because of a local leader and had basically been shown the door, although in a more colorful and less polite way. This meeting I was in lasted about 15 minutes because the person in the administration just said, sure, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Michael, if you would, talk about this. I think that in many respects, we might have to take two steps back before we actually move back forward because of some of what has been done that needs to be undone. I was very disappointed to read already in this morning's NOLA.com, Joni Hess writes an article about critics' petition against Mayor Helena Moreno's budget plan relative to the resiliency office, the climate and resiliency office, and the funding of that and the fact that there has to be some cuts there. And it just kind of reminds me that you know, a number of these activist groups, I don't know that they fully understand the financial, the horrible financial position that we find ourselves in, and that there's going to have to be decisions and choices made that are not going to be pretty, but it doesn't mean that we're stuck in that, but we might have to step back in order to move forward.
Yeah, I think the fact that they did this is absurd. I think it makes them look ridiculous, particularly given, one, the reality of the finances, and two, Mayor Moreno's impeccable credentials on environmental and sustainability issues. So to not even give her a chance to implement this in a way that is going to be effective given the constraints, but immediately publicly come out and criticize, strikes me as a political stunt that's going to reflect very poorly on the people who are behind it. I've already gotten text messages this morning from people who are on the committee who said, I want you to know I didn't sign that petition. I'm embarrassed by it. And yeah, I just think it shows that in our political environment, there are ideologues who would rather burn down the house than talk about what the budget is to decorate their room exactly as they like. And that type of nihilism we have to reject on both sides.
No, absolutely. Well put.
Sorry, so you triggered me, Newell. I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I read, I'm like, wait a minute. I mean, there's been like no one been more in your corner than she has. And look, I say that with, and I don't totally agree on all of her positions in this respect, but it's like,
right,
you're going to eat your young? I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, what are you doing? Have you looked at the totality of the circumstances of all of what's going on here? And in fact, I'm going to have Becky Mowbray and Stephen Stewart from BGR about the funding and financing of the drainage system. When you look at those numbers and how upside down we are, I mean, it's frightening. You know?
Yeah.
And they're talking about this climate sustainability thing. I mean, this goes hand in glove with all of that. And it's like, I don't know where you think this money's going to come from.
I think what they need to do is they all need to get into preferably multiple private jets. They need to fly to Davos and just have a pity party and just work it out. Just talk it out amongst themselves. And then they should all fly back individually. But make sure they buy carbon credits on the way to offset it.
All right, let's get off of this and let's get to some good news. Back-to-back bling bling. Well, I mean, I could go on forever on this issue. You know, when you talk about these industrial complexes that have been set up and how you have to continue to fuel and feed it and everything else, it's like they're not getting off that tit. I mean, it's just not happening.
No, I mean, you know, the reality is, the way that I look at this is the fact that Louisiana has now gotten the platinum deal of the year two times in a row, only state to ever do that, from Business Facilities Magazine, which is kind of like the, you know, the Sports Illustrated of economic development, if that's such a thing. The importance of it is what this is telling to the site selector community, who are the consultants we work with, and to the corporate boards, is that Louisiana is back in the game. And so, you know, we can debate the merits of the actual projects, how they are financed, how the incentives are set up. But in the context of momentum, which I think is ultimately most important, getting Louisiana back on the front foot and having people see us. And I guess the last time I felt this way, Newell, and this is why I say it in a cautionary way, was first term Jindal, right? When we were really on a roll. Mm-hmm. The momentum matters, and so and it's been done in a very clever way. I mean, the Hyundai deal was closed not just because we had the site or we had the right incentives. It's because Governor Landry flew out to Korea to go meet with them. He gave them that touch, and then when we really needed help, he was able to call the president, and we ended up having the ceremony in the White House. And so there's just a focus on getting deals done. And let me give you the converse. And this is a conversation I had last night with somebody who actually was in the administration. I get asked all the time, why are there no auto manufacturers in Louisiana? It makes no sense. We got the six class one railroads. We got the port that's bringing in rubber and steel. We have the last aluminum facility in the country. Why on earth does every single state in the South except us have a BMW or a Jaguar or a Mazda or a Ford? And the truth of it is that back when other governors were going and meeting with Mr. Toyota in Japan or going over to Germany to meet with the automakers, our governor, Mike Foster, who did a lot of things well in education, for example, didn't want to do it. It just wasn't his jam. And so because he was not proactive, we missed out on decades of auto manufacturers and all of the OEMs and knock-on effects around that. So it's never going to be perfect, but the fact that we're leaning into reindustrialization, leaning into AI, leaning into getting Louisiana back at the top of the charts, I think is the right general way to do it. And I applaud the governor and LED and Susan for what they've done.
You know, it's funny, and obviously I say this to a lot of my Democrat friends, you know, that don't like not much of what Governor Landry stands for. And I said, look, set all of that aside. There's one thing that you cannot take away from this gentleman. And look, I don't agree with every policy that he's brought forward. I don't believe, you know, every single little minutia that's engaged with LED. One thing you cannot take away from any of these folks is the energy that they're bringing, right? And yep, the willingness to go wherever they got to go, to shake whatever hand they got to shake, to do whatever they got to do in order to close the deal. And there's something to be said for that, you know, right? I mean, you've been around these folks.
You know
the people that close the deals, right?
Coffee is for closers. Coffee is not for the people who say that they made the phone calls and just didn't get a call back. Coffee is for the people when they don't get a call back, they call again. And then they go and they run into the person at the grocery store. And then they see them at the bar. This is a sales process. And we have not sold the state or the city or region well in a long time. And we have to reverse that because vibe is a thing. And right now, like, Texas has a great vibe. Tennessee has a good vibe. Places that have a vibe are doing well because they're easy to sell. People want to move there. So, the vibe check is high both on New Orleans and the state right now, because I think we're going to have people who are going to be able and willing to get back in front of the media and tell a good story. That's critical.
Well, the next topic is a great story, Italco, right? A $450 million partnership. Tell us, I mean, this has huge downstream implications for us, in my view. What the little bit that I know about it, I just right away I said, oh, my God, this is incredible. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, no, so this is a big deal. Italco, or Atlantic Aluminum, as it's known in St. James and St. John, is the last remaining alumina factory in America. Alumina is aluminum oxide. It's basically what you use to go and then make aluminum. We basically let all of them die and let all of them go to China. And I think we understand now the geopolitical implications of that. So restoring this is, yes, it's absolutely about keeping the hundreds of jobs in the region, but more fundamentally, it's about restarting production of alumina and gallium, a rare earth metal, so we can make our own chips and our own ships. So what you have in here is that the Department of Defense, or Department of War, is putting in $150 million. The private equity firm that owns Italco is putting in $300 million. So it's a public-private partnership, and the result is going to be that we're protecting hundreds of jobs in the region. But more significantly, we're making the United States less dependent on China for critical earth minerals and products that we need to make aluminum metals and alloys. So this is a nice win on a bunch of levels. And I think, I'm just looking at the number, Newell, it's going to create 500 new jobs in Louisiana to boot.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and this is the kind of thing that you can leverage with other similarly situated, what I'll refer to as anomalies, where we just got out of a sector and just handed it over to foreign countries?
Yeah, we made two fundamental mistakes coming out of the globalization era that really started with Clinton, and I guess what they call now neoliberalism. You know, there were a lot of things about it that were right, and it did increase prosperity for a lot of people. Unfortunately, most of those people live in China. And the two things that we discounted were, one, what the impact was going to be on workers back home. And the idea is that, yeah, we were just going to transition workers from factories to coding. And that, of course, was never going to really happen in an effective enough way. And the second thing is that we gave up supply chain control, which in retrospect is unforgivable. But at the time, we thought that globalization and trade was going to mean that it was the end of history. We were just going to trade with each other, and we were fine to be reliant on China for chips and for ships. And, you know, I think COVID and now what's happening geopolitically, we recognize that was foolish. So this is part of us clawing it back.
Yep. Michael, LED is at it again. They've launched a new $100 million private equity fund. Talk to us about that. It's referred to as LAIO.
Yeah, okay. So this one was a little bit confusing. I want to set it. So LAIO is Louisiana Innovation, led by Josh Flegg, one of the dozens of people that Susan Bourgeois stole from me when she got her job at the state. But they do an amazing job. They're going to be a partner. This Louisiana Impact Fund is actually a private fund. It's being led by some local Louisianians, and they're targeting $100 million in total capitalization, but focused exclusively on acquiring and growing businesses in the state. So LED is going to be a partner. They're going to help them source deals. As of right now, they're not a funder or an LP. The funding is going to come in privately from individuals and institutions. But it's a big deal because one of the challenges that a lot of places have is that 80% of venture capital is in three places around the country: Boston, New York, and Silicon Valley. So every place else tends to start companies and then they get sucked away to where the money is, because there's this thing called the bicycle ride idea, which is that if you're an investor, you want to be able to ride your bicycle to your portfolio company. So the more of these companies that show up, like Louisiana Impact Fund or others that are around, like Boot 64 or Camelback Ventures, or what we did about 15 years ago, New Orleans Startup Fund, we're increasing the stickiness of this ecosystem and our ability to keep companies here so we can have the next, what's a good example, the next Latrim, right, or the next Canal Barge. So this is about keeping them at home. It's a big deal. And Joseph Saramet, Jared Kwasner, and Joshua Cummings deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just forward leaning and always staying a little bit ahead of the curve, right? Is where you want to be all the time.
It really is. There are two ways to do economic development. There is the passive way, where you just wait for people to call you. And there's some places today, like a Dallas, where maybe you can do that. But for the rest of us, we have to be forward leaning. We have to be public. I'll give you another good example. The biggest energy conference in the country is called CERAWeek, C-E-R-A Week, in Houston every spring. 2 years ago, we took some money that we got through a grant, and we showed up there for the very first time in history. Louisiana has never participated as a state in the biggest energy conference in the country. Well, now, thanks to the governor and Secretary Bourgeois, the state is committed every single year, and we are now a major presence at this conference that has all of the major oil companies from around the world: Saudi, Aramco, Total, all the super majors. And it's just another example of, before we were like, well, they have to be here. Now we recognize that we got to be in the room cutting deals and promoting what we got. Otherwise, other people are going to take our stuff.
No, absolutely. And they don't have what we have to deliver either, right?
No, they don't.
We are blessed with a lot of natural resources.
Yeah, but Newell, we all know that kid, right, growing up, right? All the talent, all the looks. Didn't have to try that hard, and look at him now. No, this is not, the present company included, we didn't have the talent or the looks. We always had to be try-hards.
We had to try hard.
Oh, yeah.
We had to work harder than everyone else. We'll be right back with the new and improved Michael Heck for 2026. Stay with us.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
Folks, welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. And Michael, we have a special guest.
Yeah, that song always makes me smile. You know what else makes me smile, Newell?
What's that, Michael?
David B. Payton, executive director of Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses Program.
Well, David, welcome to the show with that intro. I don't know that you can top that. If you can make Michael Heck happy, right?
First of all, Sheriff, thank you for having me this morning. And Mike is a hard act to follow. one of the reasons why we're doing so well in this region is because of Mike and his voice. So thank you for having me here this morning. Thank you very much.
So David, let's talk about 10,000 small businesses. I've heard, you know, about this program. What is it, and who is it designed to help?
Absolutely. So first of all, Michael, thank you for both your leadership and your partnership with GNO Inc. We've been partners with Mike, GNO Inc., and the ecosystem partners for probably roughly about 15 years.
But yeah, a long time now.
The Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program is a platinum-level 16-week small business growth accelerator. And CEO Leadership Program, it's funded by Goldman Sachs Foundation, and it's designed to teach small business owners how to grow their revenue and scale their businesses, and then take it to the next level. So it's a national program. We have 23 sites around the United States, and we're lucky to have the South Central Region right here in New Orleans at Delgado Community College. And for 15 years, we've been helping small business owners here since 2011, and it really is a gift of growth. The kind of the impact of it is, bottom line is, since 2011, June 2nd, 2011, our first graduation class, we actually now have 1,150 small business owners that have graduated the program. That's small businesses between Lake Charles and Mobile, Alabama, from Vicksburg, Mississippi, down to Venice. And together, they represent a total revenue of about $1.7 billion and total employees of over 18,000.
So what kind of describe the program to us? What would we see there if we were to attend? I mean, it's a 16-week program, and I think it's free, right? Is that
it is. It's
correct?
Totally free. So, yeah.
That's incredible.
Best-in-class curriculum developed by Babson College, which is the number one entrepreneur in the college in the world for their MBA. And it's a 16-week experience broken down into nine modules and five clinics, and it's taught by industry professionals. They're all Babson trained in the curriculum. The business owner comes to our program once they apply and they're accepted. They come in roughly about one full day a week. The first week, it's actually 2 days. The last week, it's 2 days. But they come roughly about one day a week. And most business owners are caught up in the grind of their own hamster wheels. They're not in a position to go to school or hire a consultant, and not even in a position to develop their own strategic plans for growth. This is a leadership decision that the business owner makes. It allows them to get off their own hamster wheel and strategically work on their business rather than just serving more customers or working on somebody else's business. From day one, we start helping them to unshackle themselves from founder syndrome and imposter syndrome. So while they're in the program, we're helping them over the 16 weeks to build a very strategic and customized growth plan for their business with five-year financial projections to help them track their growth and sustain their growth. All of the support that they need is here within the program. 96% of the folks who get into the program graduate our program, and we have all the support that they need. They're assigned business advisors when they come into the program. We are to help them develop their business plans, their growth plans. And we also have technical assistance partners that we actually bring in that they may need, and capital partners, actually, that they may need to support their growth as well. I can get into the curriculum just to kind of tell you more, Sheriff, if you like.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, my experience is that when you have folks, as you pointed out, stuck on the hamster wheel, but more importantly, they only have that organically grown experience within their own experience set of their own company, and they're not really exposed to a lot of other things, right? And because they just simply don't have the time. And it just seems to me, as you just briefly described this, it's like, man, who wouldn't want to go to this? I mean, it's just,
you're right. I mean, it's a free program. Most folks, most small business owners can't see themselves off their own hamster wheel. And it's a free program. Can you afford not to at this particular point?
Yeah.
Nobody really thinks they actually have that time. So it's one of those deals where a lot of times we'll advertise, they'll see it the first time. They may be seeing it for 2 years before they actually apply. But once they get into the program, they're going to see value. 67% of the folks that come through our program, they see revenue growth within 6 months of graduating. Over 40% actually have to hire to keep up with the revenue growth. That's after 6 months.
And people, you know, a lot of folks don't realize, and Michael, you can opine on this as well. Those are huge numbers, right? I mean, it's tough out there.
Those are real numbers, Newell. And I think that just two comments on this is that although the program sounds great, the harsh reality is that most of these business support programs that are out there just don't get the job done. Goldman Sachs 10K is different in that the consistent feedback I get from people who have gone through it is I went from my business running me to me managing my business. And so David and them got a secret sauce, and it makes it really differentiated and special.
So
I would definitely.
Is there anything unique about, I mean, obviously you said y'all have sites all around the country, and I don't know what their success rate is, but what is kind of the typical business owner that you're looking for, if there is one, and why do you think you've been able to achieve those kind of incredible numbers here?
So we're looking for small business. We have kind of two categories of business owners in the class. 25% of our class are made up of small business owners with $75,000 and two or more employees, including themselves. The other 75% of the class are made up with small business owners that have four or more employees and over $150,000 up to, let's just say, about $82 million in gross revenue. So these folks come into that already having the business moving forward. They're not early startups. So they actually have kind of the revenue model together already. They just get to a point to where, as you know, you can't pedal any further without additional gears. And that's what this program does, teaches them models to actually help them build and scale their business internally so that they can actually grow as well.
Yeah, because I say to folks a lot, and I think, Michael, you've said this too, you know, in business, things don't just happen. You got to make it happen, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of folks are stuck in or are at a plateau where they don't know how to make it happen for that next level. Is that something that you see a lot in your class?
Absolutely. I mean, look, we have some folks that kind of, they know where they want to go. They just can't take the time out to plan it to get there. There's some folks that just don't know, but when they look at their numbers and their growth, they just can't believe how they've been just, you know, accelerating and moving forward all of these years. And then we have those folks, like I said, they want to grow. They just don't know which direction to take it. And once they come through this program and we work with them to select the growth, a very feasible growth opportunity in the industry and with proper timing, we help them build this growth plan. And when they leave this program, they know they have the next steps to grow. And they can look at it 5 years ahead. They're now managing their business by the numbers. They understand how to make leadership decisions based on their financials. They know about their leadership styles, their strengths and weaknesses. They know how to negotiate. They know how to pitch their business and, you know, sell the value of their business to access capital. They're very well-rounded CEOs. So we figured out that if we give them the right education, along with the skill set, help them get into the CEO mindset, and then give them a great plan moving forward and the business models that they need, it equals success all around. Just to kind of give you really some kind of a really quick statistic, actually, I'll just say notables, right? 2023 Small Business Person of the Year for the state of Louisiana through SBA was one of our graduates from our program. 2024 Small Business Person of the Year for the state of Louisiana was one of our graduates from our program. And, of course, you know, the U.S. president gives a one award to the U.S. To the one U.S. business for the United States of America. They actually came through our program here at Delgado Community College for 2024 as well.
So, David, you know, fear, right, can be a motivator in a positive way and in a negative way, right? And I wonder, tell us about the sense of, you know, the fear. But if you do, if you have the right amount of information, right type of information at the right time, it mitigates fear, right? And it mitigates risk.
That's right. So these business owners come in and we give them a kind of a toolkit, a tool chest full of models to move forward to break down those fears. The very first 2 days of the program, we do face-to-face days. This is a face-to-face program. Business owners going to be from 8 in the morning to 5:30 in the afternoon. Day one, we're trying to break down founder syndrome. And for some of them, you know, they're trying to figure out, do I really belong here? There's an imposter syndrome there, right? We're showing them the value of what they do, their value in the economic landscape, and for some of them in the universe, right, in the world. Fear is real, no doubt about it. It's part of what shackles them to the pole. It's part of sometimes what keeps them from growing. What we try to do is unlock that potential by both giving, again, them that education and the skill set and the mindset. And when we turn them loose after they've worked on that business opportunity, that growth plan for the next 16 weeks, it's produced phenomenal results.
So tell us about the application process. If there are people out here in the listening audience that have an interest, what do they do and how do they go about associating themselves with this program?
Absolutely. So first of all, to be eligible for the program, you have to have a minimum of $75,000 in gross revenue, two or more employees, and then you can include yourself as well, and been in business for 2 years. We have a two-step application process. And let me mention this as well before I get into that. We do three cohorts a year. We start one in January, we start another in May, and then another in September. And we're taking applications year-round for this program. It's a two-step process. The first part of the application, all you're doing is it's kind of like a screening part, right? Getting to know you, finding out, and making sure that you actually have the qualifications for the program. If you don't, we're going to make sure we match you up with some of our technical assistance partners, that you can come back to us. The part two are for those who are actually qualified, and that is the invitation to actually interview at that particular point. That is a more detailed application that, in addition to part one being 50 questions, this is about 50 questions as well, but there's some supplemental documents that you'll actually have to turn in before a specific timeline so that you can get scheduled for an interview for the program. Again, we're taking applications year-round, and the best place to find out, to find our application, you can either go to the Delgado Community College website and put in Goldman Sachs, and it'll bring you right there to the application information and more about our program here locally. Or you can go to the one link that everybody around the United States, including us, we go to have our small business owners apply to, and it's 10ksbapply.com. 10ksbapply.com.
10KSB?
Apply.com.
Apply.com. Okay.
And right now, we're accepting applications for our summer cohort. We're that far in advance. We just graduated a class of 38 in December. We're starting with another class of 38 next week on the 21st. And we're taking applications to January 30th for that summer cohort, which is going to start on May 6th through August the 5th.
Very interesting. I would have loved to have gone through this program at one point in time in my career. I mean, I I mean, these things are few and far between. I mean, it just sounds incredible. And David Payton, executive director of Goldman Sachs, 10,000 small businesses. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing this information with us today. And best of luck.
Thank you, Newell. Thank you, Michael. And to the small business owners, we hope that you accept the gift of growth. We want to help you grow your business. Thank you very much.
All righty, folks. We'll be right back with Michael Hecht's final thoughts. Stay with us.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
On a text line, it says, what's the program name, please? It's called the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses. And you can get it at the Delgado website, or you go to 10ksbapply.com for more information. That's an incredible program, Michael. I would have loved to have had the opportunity to go through it. I mean, I'm totally intrigued by it.
When it came out, it was part of the deal. They had to do this because Lloyd Blankfein at the time, the CEO, was trying to open up a commercial bank. And so they had to do something for the community as part of that. So I was like, okay, this is going to be nonsense. It's just window dressing. It's going to come and go. It turns out that not only was it a really substantial program, it's been sustained for over 15 years. So I give a lot of credit to Goldman Sachs for doing it the real way. It wasn't necessarily what I expected, and I was wrong.
Yeah. So let's talk about federal dollars flowing here. A lot of different programs, a lot of money.
Yeah, big shout out to our friend Steve Scalise. He's really been leading this amongst the delegation. You know, people say that nothing happens in Congress anymore, but this is legit. The House has passed over $350 million that would go to over 50 Louisiana projects. The biggest one, $137.5 million, would go to the Morganza to the Gulf levees and flood walls that Terrebonne and Lafourche desperately need. Also, new studies and upgrades for the North Shore, for Slidell. And so now it has to go over to the Senate. And the only issue there, I think we'll get it passed, but the amounts are large for earmarks. And so hopefully, you know, we can count on our senators, Kennedy and Cassidy, who we know support this, to drive it through for us.
Absolutely. Michael, as always, we truly appreciate your time and your insight, and really enjoyed the conversation this morning. Really excited about what's going on at City Hall, and hopefully we'll see and we'll be able to talk about execution in the very near future.
Yeah, nothing will give me more pleasure than talk about results on this show for everybody. And I'm optimistic we're going to be able to do that. But thank you, Newell, for being such a stalwart through the past few years. It's been challenging at times, but I feel like we kept the golf cart upright going around the corner.
Absolutely, no doubt. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. When we come back, folks, we'll visit with the folks from BGR, and we'll be talking about how we pay for drainage here. Moving into the future, a lot of stuff happening, some pretty shocking numbers as well. And we'll visit with Dr. Skip Gallagher, UNO professor and NOPD watchdog, in the back half of the hour.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.